This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. School board elections are usually fairly low-key events. They really don't garner much public attention. But in 2009, the school board election in Wake County attracted national media attention. There were protests and arrests at school board meetings, and eventually a Republican majority took over control of the board. They formally ended a decade-old student assignment policy that used busing to achieve greater diversity. A new book looks at the significance of this election against the backdrop of demographic and political changes in Wake County. The book is called The End of Consensus, Diversity, Neighborhoods, and the Politics of Public School Assignments. And I'm joined now by its two co-authors. Andrew Taylor is a professor of political science at NC State University. Andy, welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank.
Also with us is Toby Parcell, who works at NC State. She's a professor of sociology. Toby, welcome.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Toby, tell us a little bit about how you came to do the research on this topic and the two of you collaborated on it.
Well, in 2009, I was noticing all the publicity about the upcoming school board election and was noticing that the community seemed to be upset about the student assignment policies that had been implemented over a period of years. People seemed to feel that the assignment policies were disrupting valuable social ties, transferring children from one school to another, independent of promotion to middle school or promotion to high school. And I was intrigued by this. And I thought, well, what's going on here? From a sociologist's perspective, social ties are important. If people feel their social ties are being disrupted, then that's something that I ought to be concerned about, being a scholar who looks at families, schools, and child well-being. So I began talking with Andy about this because another thing that puzzled me was that the whole situation was so politicized. And I knew Andy was an expert on North Carolina Republican politics and would have valuable insights into this situation. So that's how we began our collaboration.
And so, Andy, take us back. We're talking about an assignment policy that did, in many cases, separate families. They might have a child in one school and not necessarily the high school within their neighborhood or the feeder school and all that sort of thing. How did Wake County come to that assignment policy?
Well, there's two sort of things going on here, Frank. There's the general assignment policy, which was what has been popularly known as a diversity policy, which really was instituted right at the beginning when the Wake County public school system, the unified Wake County public school system that we know today, was formed in 1976, out of the City of Raleigh schools and the school system of the surrounding Wake County. And the general assignment policy, as I said, was a diversity policy. It was based initially on race. There were guidelines with regards to how the racial composition of each individual school, and in some cases, at some times, the county did well based upon those guidelines. Sometimes it didn't do so well, but there were these guidelines for racial diversity. And in 2000, that was changed explicitly to a socioeconomic metric. But then the second level is this annual reassignment that was going on, which was a function of the tremendous growth that was going on in Wake County, and that in order to keep up with the massive influx of population, every year the school board and staff had to rearrange the deck, so to speak, to make sure that schools were not being totally overcrowded. And this meant that there were a lot of people every year who were caught up in this reassignment process.
So not all of the pain and discomfort of reassignment was coming from diversity. It was all, but this, because you've got this rapidly growing county and a diversity policy, all of this comes together.
Yeah.
And so, Toby, what you find is the way we had been sort of presenting this in the media, and frankly, when it became a political debate, what we heard mostly was this was diversity versus local school control, right? And so then you looked into it, and what did you find?
Well, as you say, that was the media presentation, a juxtaposition of preference for diversity versus neighborhood schools. But when we looked at our survey results, we found that among our representative sample of Wake County adults, preference for diversity in neighborhood schools were not polar opposites. They were negatively related, to be sure, but not perfectly so. And what we inferred from that is that everyone, in theory anyway, favors neighborhood schools. They have a lot to recommend them. But a subset of those individuals who favor neighborhood schools are also very passionate about diversity. In addition, we found three other sentiments were driving the attitudes towards the school situation in Wake County. One was the notion of challenge, that parents just found the whole situation of children being moved around or potentially moved around very challenging to deal with. Another thing that we found was that people were worried about the dangers to children's learning and to children's friendships from these disruptions of being moved around. And finally, people just found the whole process to entail a lot of uncertainty, which you implied a minute ago, that there was announced in January the potential for these nodes of children to be moved. And then there were hearings, and then there were possible exceptions granted or selection of magnet schools. So by the time things were settled in May, the family had undergone a period of considerable uncertainty, which seemed to be of concern.
So this brings us to social capital. I want to talk about that in a minute. But Andy, I want to talk about, because now we're seeing a much more complicated picture here, right? There are growth challenges as well as diversity that's driving reassignment. So that's part of it. We're seeing the idea that these are not polar opposites, the idea that one can embrace local schools and diversity at the same time is present in your research. But also big changes in the Republican Party at this time. Talk about some of those changes and how schools became an important part of the essentially civil war going on in the Republican Party.
Yeah, well, so we're talking, obviously, the end of consensus, which is the title of the book. The focus is on the 2009 election, which is sort of the manifestation of that. But there's a great deal of build-up, and we've just talked about some of it. And one of the important ingredients, as you mentioned the question, is the rise of Republican Party as a viable political entity in Wake County. There really wasn't much of an organized Republican Party in the county before the early 1990s. And so you get to the late 1990s and early 2000s, and there actually is a two-party system in Wake County, which there hadn't been before. And so Republicans get interested naturally in school board elections. And you start to see the endorsement of candidates for school board elections, which are ostensibly nonpartisan.
But it's more than that, just because in some ways there was a division within the Republican Party over ideology. And,
yes, there
and schools
does
was a good way to kind of define yourself.
Yeah, it is interesting. There is a sort of civil war. Maybe a civil war is perhaps an extreme term, but alongside this emergence, there is a battle over sort of ideology within the local Republican Party, within the county Republican Party, and schools becomes part of that. What is really interesting, though, is it doesn't replicate the ideological divisions at the national level. Generally, conservative Republicans were pushing for things like curriculum change, vouchers, those kinds of issues. But in Wake County, it became more things such as general assignment, ending annual reassignment, year-round schools, and a sort of anti-year-round school movement as well.
So, Toby, let's talk about some of the other surprising findings to me. We talked about social capital, the idea that we're concerned about networks that our children are making and we're making within these schools. Who is most concerned about that? Because, again, there's socioeconomic diversity. There are parents who are working hard and other parents who may be more affluent. Did it matter?
Yes. We did find some social differences that were important. Parents who had children in the Wake County public schools were more supportive of neighborhood schools. They had essentially more skin in the game. They had more of those challenges and uncertainties to deal with. One of the other things that we were curious about at the beginning of the project, we had uncovered some older survey data that suggested that African Americans in Wake County were not completely behind the diversity policy, which seemed a little puzzling to us and a little counterintuitive. So when we looked at our survey results, we found that there was considerable variation among our African American respondents regarding their support for the diversity policy. And the more affluent African American respondents were more supportive of diversity, whereas the less affluent African American respondents were more supportive of neighborhood schools and more skeptical about the diversity policy, and also maybe just more challenged at some of the implementation issues that that we had described. So socioeconomic status was definitely a factor there.
And some of that came out in the focus groups that we did.
Right.
Toby's talked a lot about the survey, and the survey is a large end survey in which African American respondents were overweighted, which is why we had a lot of confidence in our results from gleaned from African American respondents. But also we did some focus groups and a lot of elite interviewing as well. And what Toby mentioned with regards to the conflicted views, particularly of lower income African Americans towards the diversity policy, came out a little bit in the focus group as well.
Do you have any idea what's happening there, why this split, and whether or not this says anything about the importance a family might place on social capital, or are there other factors driving these?
Well, I would suspect that it's socioeconomic status that is influencing this. Some of our respondents in the interviews and focus groups said, I have the capacity to deal with this assignment policy. We have enough resources. Our children are going to be fine. Families that don't have those economic resources, maybe they're working the adults in the household, if there are two adults, because a number of households might indeed be single-headed households. But if there are two adults, they might be working three or four jobs to make ends meet. So the notion that their children might be reassigned to another part of town might make things harder for them. And there was one woman we interviewed who said, how far is too far? In other words, how quickly can I get to my child if there is a problem? If there's a problem with the child, or if there's bad weather, or there's some need for me to get there quickly. So you have to conceptualize the residence here, the child over here, and the adult or adults may be working in different parts of Wake County, even if they are working in Wake County. So you have to consider the whole geographic setup and its implications.
Andy, you've both said in this book that in a lot of ways, or the book certainly suggests, given what you found when you drilled down into the opinions about the assignment policy, it was not a simple binary. And certainly the media portrayed it that way. The politicians as well. I mean, there was not a lot of nuance on the part of particularly the Republican insurgents saying it's about local schools. I mean, I think their lack of nuance guaranteed them spots on The Daily Show for weeks and weeks in some ways. So how is it possible that we hold these complicated nuanced views but are sort of easily stampeded into one vision or another when politicians dare to speak for us?
Well, in defense of the candidates on both sides of the issue in 2009, there were other issues that were important. I mean, the mandatory year-round or effective mandatory year-round policy in certain parts of the county was very important to people who opposed the status quo, effectively the Democratic school board in 2009. And candidates did run on that. And in fact, that was the first issue that the new school board dealt with in 2000 when it got sworn in January 2010. It was the year-round schools. It wasn't the general assignment policy. But you're right, Frank. I think this was the issue that really sort of captured the attention of the candidates on both sides and the media in 2009. And yet the voters, the public, were had a much more nuanced view. I think the general discontent that many people had with the democratic status quo in 2009 was bred in a whole host of different things. A lot of the things that Toby's just talked about, which really derive more from the annual reassignment process and the general upheaval and flux that the system was in, rather than diversity versus neighborhood schools. And you, the year-round school policy in many really upset a lot of people, more so than did diversity upset them.
And in the same way that perhaps we oversimplified the 2009 election, you say we may have done the same thing in our analysis of the 2011 election that saw the return of the Democrats.
Yeah, and in fact, I think in some ways that's demonstrated by how much the general assignment policy has moved between before 2009 and after 2011. The rhetoric, the division, you say the binary nature of the issue suggests we would have had a massive change towards neighborhood schools in 2009 and a massive shift back towards diversity after 2011. And that's not what happened. It took the Republican majority almost 2 years to come up with this controlled choice policy, which was definitely moved us towards neighborhood schools, but wasn't a strictly proximity-based policy. And then we haven't moved back to a whole-scale embrace of diversity with the Democrats in control.
Yeah, that's interesting. Things really haven't changed much at all in the entire period, right? In terms of if you're in Wake County schools, things look a lot the way they did in 2008.
There have been some changes. There's continued in-migration to the county. The county continues to gain residents. The proportion of Latino families in the county has also increased, and they have slightly larger families than average, and they're also more likely to use the public schools. So there have been some demographic changes during the interval, but in terms of the policies, as Andy suggested, there has not been the black and white, the flip-flopping across policies that we might have anticipated.
Fascinating stuff. I want to thank you both for being on the program. Toby Parcell, a sociology professor at NC State, and Andrew Taylor, who teaches political science at that same institution. They co-authored a new book, The End of Consensus, Diversity, Neighborhoods, and the Politics of Public School Assignments. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you for having us.
You can find out more information about the book at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director. Andrew Tai, our intern. Brent Wolf, WNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.